Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, after Sunday's results, is the Serie A title done and dusted, or is there still time to make a race of it? Also, crisis? What crisis? We're talking Le crisis in French football. And with Leverkusen fans almost tasting the German Cup within their grasp, what are the chances of a fond farewell at the end of the season for their much sought-after coach, Xabi Alonso? Nikki, what a cracker of a match. Was it a cracker of a match in Italy on Sunday?
I thought it was a decent match. I was saying this to you guys just before we came in. I'm never entirely sure if it's like appropriate with On the Continent to bring in the Premier League and mention it, but I'm an Arsenal fan. People know this about me. And I was watching Arsenal Liverpool the same day, and I was going back and forth between that and the Atalanta-Lazio game as well earlier in the afternoon. And as much as I've enjoyed Atalanta this season, I was thinking, going back and forth between those two games, you can see a real gulf in quality. There is an echelon that Atalanta, despite being fourth in Serie A, despite being a team that I think are really playing some nice football, is not at. And then you went on to Derby d'Italia, and it was like, no, this is that level, and absolutely, and perhaps even in Inter's case beyond, because I think they are genuinely one of the best teams in Europe. I think they're somehow still not quite treated as that by some people, even though they were in the Champions League final last season and gave Manchester City really all they could handle. Well, I think part of it is probably because Serie A has slipped a bit, and the overall standard of the league is not as high as it was, depending how nostalgic you want to be. You could say 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I think that there is, in all things, Premier League centricness, which is why I slightly regret coming in with a Premier League comparison. But I do think they're playing really exceptional football this season. And I think they showed it against Juventus. I think Juventus were not, in the same way they've been all season, they were not also runs. They made the most of what they have. But I think you saw what all of us who've watched this title race closely have thought all year. As impressive as Juventus have been, as dogged as they've been, as stubborn as they've been to get up into this game with having only one loss in the entire season, they are not at that level which Inter are. Inter are really, really, again, in my opinion, one of the very best teams in Europe right now.
And you kind of felt that, didn't you, when the Juventus players came off the pitch? You know, you looked at the faces of Vlahovic and Chiesa in particular.
Yes.
And they're like, well, what are we meant to do about that? Like we're just not going to win it this season, are we? You know, that it really felt like that. And it's weird to have, firstly, such a one-sided one-niller. But at the same time, as Dotton was saying at the beginning, it's really quite satisfying as well. You know, it felt like a full meal. And how much of that is because when the WWE d'Italia means something and when there's something on it, it's a massive plus for Italian football.
Yeah, I mean, look, the WWE d'Italia is such a fixture. Obviously, that name, the Derby of Italy, which dates back to Gianni Brera in the 1960s, was talking about a completely different era in Italian football, but it was a time when they were both winning league titles. There's plenty of people who've looked in more recent times and gone, well, shouldn't the Derby d'Italia be Juventus and Milan? Because, yeah, frankly, Milan and Inter have right now exactly the same number of league titles, and Milan have won more in Europe. Juventus are streets ahead in terms of number of domestic titles won. But this fixture has a life of its own for other reasons that go beyond just the results. It goes back to controversies with Giuliano fouling Ronaldo and various sort of late season high impact fixtures. Even recently, even when Inter went in the title race and they had that opportunity to help Napoli win the league a few years ago, and then Gonzalo Higuain punctures them in injury time at the death after they've been winning 2-1 on 10 men. There's so many stories woven into this narrative that the game always matters. But to speak to what you were just saying, Andy, about why this one felt meaty. The occasion, yes, absolutely. And of course, San Siro was brilliant like it always was. And there was an incredible Medusa choreography from the Curva Nord. But I think Juventus, despite clearly being second best in this game, I do think they gave as good an account of themselves as you could have really sort of asked them to. And you think about Bremer with that extraordinary tackle to take the ball off the toes of Thuram when he's behind him in the first half. Chesney making a couple of brilliant saves in the second half. Weston McKennie, who I think perhaps more than anybody embodies how this team has punched above its weight. Maybe that's a bad analogy given that Weston McKennie's lost a lot of weight this season, but someone who is making the most of the talent he has, going on this mazy run and putting Vlahovic in for the one real chance Juventus had, and unfortunately Vlahovic takes a heavy touch. I think Juventus stopped this from being a blowout, which it could have been. They made it into as good a game as they could. But again, there's just an absolute quality gap there, which you see in the likes of Lautaro Martinez, you see it in Thuram, you see it in Hakan Çalhanoğlu playing a 60-yard pass that takes out literally the whole Juventus team.
That was a good pass, I must say. You know, it's the first time ever that you and I have seen the odd thing in a football match, and both seen it on the television, which was, I saw Vlahovic come off that pitch and look, like you said, like, what are we supposed to do? And particularly after missing that chance that you talked to.
Yeah, he's the one who could have done something better.
He's the one that should. But how does that distort the league when one team is apparently in another league from the others?
But this is always the question, I think, particularly in modern European football, isn't it? The fact that if you're going to have an absolutely elite team, it's unrealistic to expect like three other elite teams to keep pace with them. You know, you've either got a situation where you want a really tight league that is slightly lower on quality, or you have a team that's incredible quality that no one else can touch. So, you know, we might be having this conversation that we're starting to have about Inter in about Manchester City. In like a month and a half or 2 months.
PSG?
PSG, they're a good example. Bayern, we'll see what happens after this weekend.
Yeah,
we'll come back to that. You know, they've still won the league 11 times in a row. Mm-hmm. So it's still unusual to have that sort of gap. But I guess the thing about Inter, Nicky, is it would have been quite easy to see the Champions League final as unexpected, as Inzaghi excelling as a cup coach all over again, albeit the biggest cup of them all. I don't think that many people saw them building on it. I think a lot of people, certainly from outside Italy, thought, okay, well, they've done something that's absolutely amazing, but they're under massive financial pressure. Mm-hmm. They're going to lose a few players this summer, and they did. But what does this say about their recruitment and how the club still manages to run despite this financial pressure?
Yeah, I mean, the headline names, I didn't think they'd be as good as last season. You say goodbye to Edin Dzeko, you say goodbye to Romelu Lukaku, you say goodbye to Andre Onana. These are not small pieces of the puzzle. In fact, very specifically, I think that run to the Champions League final in part relied on the fact that you could rotate Lukaku and Dzeko at times and let both of them be a little bit fresher getting into that late part of the season. Brozovic as well, although by the end of his time there, he'd sort of lost his spot because of this Calhanoglu transformation where Inzaghi's brought him back to be the regista, the deep-lying midfielder, which has been phenomenally successful for him. But that's another really talented footballer that you lost. And I think lots of us looked at that squad and thought that can't possibly go as well as it did last year. I suppose it's a two-part answer. Part one is Beppe Marotta, who, of course, for years and years was the chief architect of that Juventus team that won 9 league titles in a row, has been working his magic and doing things like securing Thuram on a free transfer, who's been incredible. Thuram, I think it's still asking a lot, and the season is still almost 50% of it still to run. He has been individually better than either Dzeko or Lukaku were. Now, that's partly about the fit. He fits fantastically with Lautaro Martinez, the way that they're willing to be fluid and swap spaces with each other, I think really embodies again how Inter play under Inzaghi. The whole team is so fluid. Benjamin Pavard, who's another of these brilliant signings Morata's made, literally was playing as the right-sided centre-back in a three, but seemed to show up in the penalty area several times, including right before the goal, which was an own goal. He's there attempting and missing a scissor kick. And it's fine because you've got this understanding in the team where Barella will drop into that space behind him, Damian will drop into that space behind him. There's so much fluidity, sorry to repeat the word, in the side. And that's Inzaghi's management. The recruitment is Marotta's recruitment. He looks like he's on the verge of landing another coup even at the moment, because Piotr Zielinski, who was a key starter for that Napoli team that won the league last season, heading to be out of contract this summer, and looks like Inter are going to land him. So Marotta's recruitment has been exceptional. There is still this question of, are we looking at a house built on foundations of sand? Because the club has huge outstanding debts, and on and on this goes without any clear answer as to how those are going to be resolved.
But the outstanding debts notwithstanding, if I go back to my initial point about it feels like a league of its own, mm-hmm. Or Inter feel like they're in a league of their own, surely they've got bigger ambitions then than just winning the Scudetto. That almost feels as if that's just part of the course for them. But actually, do they not see themselves as Champions League finalist again?
I think the league of their own thing needs a little bit of pushback, because even now they're 4 points clear. Yes, it's 4 points clear with a game in hand. That game in hand is against Atalanta, who, even though I've just said not quite in love with Inter, they're still fourth in the table. So that's not a gimme. You don't take that as a...
They've stayed there without Lukman in the last month as well, which has been big.
He's been doing really well for us.
What's he been up to?
Well, I can tell you on another podcast called Africa TC.
I don't think this title race is completely done. I think, obviously, there's no question Inter are leading it. And I think the only real scenarios in which I could see them letting it slip is injuries. But I still say, and this is where you start talking about those sales, if Lautaro gets injured, we might have some questions. Yeah. If Calhanoglu gets injured, we might have some questions. There's a couple of players in that team who you look at and think those are really fundamental. And those are injuries that you might not handle as well. Because we saw even at the end of this game, Marko Arnautovic come off the bench and fail to score another sitter. He hasn't been a good signing. Mm. Alexis Sanchez is not at the level of Lautaro or Thuram at all. So up front in particular, they are thin. But yes, I think that definitely at the beginning of this season, if you offered Inter fans win the league and nothing else, they'd have bitten your hand off, right? That would have been a non-conversation. They want to get that 20th league title, put the second star on their badge before Milan do, because they're both on 19 at the moment. It matters. It really does. It matters.
Of course, yeah.
But right now, I think the team... that the club and its supporters certainly would aspire that there's going to be another deep run in the Champions League, because they believe they're good enough. Mm. They've hamstrung themselves because they didn't win their Champions League group, and it was on tiebreakers against Sociedad, who they drew with twice, and I think they have a lot of regrets about not winning either of those games, because they should have done. And now they play Atletico as a result. So it's one of those things where it could unravel as good as they've been in the first round of the knockout stage. But if they get past Atletico, I don't see any reason why they can't go to the final again, because I think they're good enough.
I still think, obviously, like, you can never assume about fitness, but I think when that draw would have come out the Perspex bowl, Atletico would have gulped more than Inter did.
Mm.
I think even though Atletico low-key had a really good 2023, they're just re-finding their way in the Champions League. I mean, we think of 2014 and 2016 Atletico like it was yesterday. They're so different to that. And they're very defensively suggestible as well. When you consider the options that Inter have, I think that definitely makes them the favourites. I guess the question is, moving away from Europe, because obviously they're not in it this season, what about Juventus? Because obviously they're really dogged, as you were saying, Nicky. They're not going to give up. That grind almost got them a point in this game, really, that they didn't deserve, because they were hammered and they still only lost to an own goal. I get the impression that they're not really going to go away. What will say if they finish second in this season? What will they be able to take from it, and how do they build on it, do you think? I mean, is this season, just results-wise, been the ultimate vindication of the way that Allegri wants to do things after years of exploring a different way of doing things?
Yeah, I think Allegri has put his stamp all over this team again. I already mentioned McKennie. I think Adrian Rabiot is another player who was getting different conversation, because Rabiot, I think, has obviously shown quality in different departments, but certainly was being treated very dismissively by a lot of people, including myself, not so long ago, and has been...
Well, really, they need to keep him, don't they?
Yeah, yes, yeah. They do. Been really excellent this season. I think there's some really encouraging youth coming through at Juventus, and actually, having been a team that was grinding out one goal wins the whole season prior to this Inter game, actually the start of 2024 has been packed with goals. And part of that has been because 18-year-old Kenan Yildiz you've put into the attack, and suddenly alongside Vlahovic has seemed to reinvigorate Vlahovic. His movement, the way he takes defenders away off the ball, has seemed to work really well. So everyone's excited about Yildiz. They've got Illing Jr. still there, who's, I think, probably deserving more minutes. They've got Matias Sule, who they own, is currently absolutely tearing up the league on loan. Ooh. So I think there's potential for Juventus to take some really big strides forward, even from where they are. I think that second place for them, while of course this carrot dangled of the possible title challenge is exciting, I think second place for them would be a very solid place for a building block. And I think next season, I expect them to be stronger again.
Yeah, just one question. If I could just go back to the Inter situation for a moment. When you said earlier on that, let's be careful in talking about them running away with a league of their own. The one thing that you said there that struck me was just how important Inzaghi is as a coach. Yeah, he's never spoken about. When people talk about, you know, where's the next big coach coming from in Italy, he's never spoken about. Okay,
I guess the question is, does that change once he's got a league title in the bag?
I was having this conversation with Mino Rizzucchi and Patrick Hendrick on Italian Football Podcast. I do. But Patrick Hendrick is a international feed commentator on Serie A games, and he's really excellent. And he was making exactly that point. And he was saying he needs that first league title. He's done incredible work in the cups. The fact that he was winning cups with Lazio, he's come to Inter and he's reinforced reputation as the guy who wins cups between the Supercoppa and the Coppa Italia, going to the Champions League final. But I think for the international sort of validation, he needs to win his first league title, which should happen this season. And then I think you're going to start seeing him get much more acknowledgement, because he does deserve it. He's definitely, I can talk about talented players in this team, but I think when you look at Çalhanoğlu, is the obvious one to keep coming back to, but also Henrik Mkhitaryan alongside him. Mkhitaryan's having an exceptional season, and that is to Inzaghi's credit, as is the fact that he's been doing something he gets criticised for a lot, which is making these substitutions often in the second half, rotating his fullbacks, making sure everyone gets minutes, which I think has kept the team fresher late into the season.
You see, when you said international validation, you took me back to where you started, the Premier League. All of a sudden, I just thought, Chelsea coach 2026.
Do you know where it took me to? It's when you go on one of those trains in Italy and you haven't stamped your ticket beforehand, and they're saying, validation, validation. And they're saying, English, no, Italian, validation, validation. It happened to me.
Did you know you can use the train line app now? You don't even have to.
How was I to know?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What difference a game makes in Serie A, but what difference a game, one fixture, makes in the French Prem as well, Ligue 1, Marseille versus Lyon, Andy. That was the game of the weekend, as it were. And, well, it didn't go the way that Marseille wanted it to go.
No, it didn't. And I think a lot of people looked at this from the outside and thought, This match is was capital for Lyon, and it was, of course. You know, they're trying to get away from the relegation zone still. They're on the back of a defeat to Rennes at home, which really cost them. Now, after them beating Lille in the Coupe de France last night, they've won 7 of the last 9 under Pierre Sage, their interim coach. Well, interim till the end of the season coach, and you know that sounds great. Those two defeats have still really stung and still really cost them. But of course, because of all that talk about Lyon and them being the biggest spenders in Europe in the big five leagues of Europe in the transfer window, and that it's remarkable that, you know, a recent Champions League semi-finalist and such a big club has been glued to the relegation zone for most of the season, it's easy to overlook Marseille and the difficulties they have. I think coming out the back of this, which was a 1-0 win for Lyon in Lyon at Décines last Sunday, I think maybe now people are starting to realise that actually not necessarily Rino Gattuso is under pressure as the coach, but the whole club is under pressure. The players, the president, the board, the ownership, Frank McCourt, the culture, everything about it. And, you know, there has been a rising tide of discontent amongst those fans and amongst the very vocal supporters groups for quite a long time. But what you've got to realise, Marseille really hate Lyon. As as you know, people would have seen.
And the feeling is mutual.
Yeah, but I think as we, it certainly is. But as we saw from, of course, those really unsavoury scenes that saw the first game originally abandoned when the Lyon coach was attacked and, of course, Fabio Grosso, the then coach, was injured. And all the rest of it. But what that means in a football sense is you cannot turn up to an Olympico, because it's Olympique Lyon and Olympique Marseille, you cannot turn up to an Olympico and play like this. Now, if Gattuso was in a weaker position, in other words, if people were concentrating more on what's happening on the pitch and less on what's happening upstairs, there would be some questions to ask. I mean, he was frank as he always is, you know, he said we didn't deserve to win it, etc, etc, etc. But, you know, this team of his that You know, they've done a lot of work in the transfer window as well, Marseille.
And Lyon as well.
Yeah, Lyon have, but of course, because they've done so much work and because they needed to, because they didn't really get a proper transfer window last summer with the signing restrictions, I think it's sort of taken away from, again, Marseille doing stuff in the shadows, which is a little bit unusual for them. The fact that they have been busy in this transfer window, which is really underlined what bad business they've done in recent windows. You know, that's normally what happens when you're busy in January. It's because you've made a bad job of your recruitment before, or because things have gone really badly in the first half of the season. But it was remarkable in that Amin Arry hit the crossbar after 3 seconds. 3 seconds. He had a shot from the halfway line from kickoff and it hit the crossbar.
It all counts.
And you're thinking, or not as the case may be. And after that, you're thinking, okay, they've come here with a bit of effort. And afterwards, nothing. And all their big players just didn't show up. And even when Lyon ran out of gas and they're having a few fitness issues, I think it's fair to say, which are a remnant of the Laurent Blanc era in recent games, even when they're closing them out, Marseille never felt like they were able to take advantage of.
But that's,
of that.
I mean, that's something Gattuso has spoken about with his team as well, fitness issues, sort of trying to force a mid-season training camp almost in terms of the way they're approaching their fitness. And I don't think that's generally very effective. To ask people in the middle of a packed schedule to try and build their fitness levels up is difficult.
What's gone wrong then? Is this a existential crisis, to use a French philosophical word?
Yeah, I think it probably is. And I think the man who's really under the microscope at the moment is Pablo Longoria, the president. Now, he's got a really interesting background. He's not even 40 yet, and he's been president of Marseille for a good few years now. He was the sporting director before. He was an agent before that. He's got a very, very interesting backstory. So he's worked at Valencia, worked at a number of other clubs as sort of director of football or adjacent to director of football. And I wonder if this is actually the source of quite a few of their problems. I mean, he was dropped in as almost an emergency president. But when that happens, you want a stability candidate, don't you? But of course, he is, by his nature, used to having really busy transfer windows. And for that reason, it feels as if nothing is stable. Now, you talked about Alexis Sanchez before. It's amazing to me how maybe he's realizing now how much more value he had at Marseille than he had at Inter. Mm. So at Inter, he's not as important as he was the first time. Mm. He's a bit peripheral because he's got great players ahead of him and he's getting on a bit. But at Marseille, the players loved him and the fans loved him. And he was the guy who really was the energy. He was the tiger in the tank, really. He was the guy who sort of gave that team emphasis and momentum. And I can't stress enough how important that is at the Velodrome. Now, Aubameyang,
smiling at Tiger, because of course in Italy he did that whole like I'm a lion in a cage, and he posted a quite gruesome picture of like a lion covered in blood over.
Are you saying I've demoted him as a tiger?
Tigers are bigger than lions, aren't they?
A king of the jungle, though, isn't it?
Because used to be like a guardian small talk. The only reason I know is because we used to do guardian small talk when I was on staff there. We asked sports people questions and we always had to ask them who would win a fight between a lion and a tiger. I don't know where that came from, but that was always
if
one of the questions.
It's a Bengal tiger, yeah, he's in with the shout.
Tigers are literally tigerish.
Yeah,
well, I think you got the casting vote here.
Thank you.
But I think it's funny that Aubameyang has actually had an all right season after a difficult start. Mm. He cannot be that player. He's got flair. He's got personality. Mm. He can score goals. He can't drive a team like Alexis. Mm. And they're really missing that. It's only one of the problems. But if you look at the amount of transfers that Longoria has made in recent windows, I mean, last January, they broke their transfer record to bring in Vitinha for 30 million euros. Young player, needs a bit of time, enormous potential. And like after like less than a year, they decide, oh, it's not working. And they send him off on loan to Genoa, which is kind of, Genoa is like the Marseille dumpster for signings that don't work, isn't it?
Yeah, I just thinking about this sort of stability question though, and that actually that personality question as well, because of course Gattuso was only there in the first place because Marcelino looked around at this toxic environment around the club and fans piling in and I mean generally behaving as one of the most toxic fan bases in Europe, and said, I don't want to be part of it. And it almost feels like you hire Gattuso because you think he's such a strong man, because that's his reputation, that he can stand up to it. There was something Didier Deschamps, I think, said this week, saying the problem is everyone wants Gennaro Gattuso, the manager, to be Gennaro Gattuso, the player,
yeah,
which is not a fair expectation. And I mean, to be fair to Gattuso, he does still puff up and shout and do all that sort of visible stuff. But I almost feel like in this situation, I remember when he was at Milan, there was at least one game, maybe a couple, after a win against Lazio. I remember doing a win against Lazio. He like got into a huddle in the middle of the pitch and let all of his players just slap him. Like they were literally all slapping him around the face. And he was saying this is like a way to get like attention. I say, oh, you know, making a joke about it. Oh, sometimes players can't get in the team. That's how they can all. But it almost feels like that's become his sort of, his role as a manager now is to just be like a literal punch bag. And it's like, okay, well, we'll bring him in. And now everyone can do Gattuso out. And not saying he's a great manager, because I don't think he is, unfortunately. But it feels like the whole environment around that club is sort of, again, toxic in a sort of structural way. And I don't think it's about who you sign in January that's going to fix it.
But head coaches get typecast, don't they?
Yeah.
And he definitely has been, right?
Mm.
I know this is a, you know, intrinsically Marseille crisis that we've been talking about, but I wonder whether there's a bigger crisis, just as we were talking about the issue in Serie A with Inter perhaps running away with the title, at least being in a different league, quote unquote, Nikki, I'm careful about what I say, from the others. But arguably, you know, as we mentioned when we talked about that, the Ligue 1 has the same issue, don't they?
With it definitely does.
PSG. And I wonder, is PSG a factor in what's happening to Marseille, what's happening to other teams?
I think partly, yeah. I think they're an easy bogeyman to blame because, of course, financially, with the backing they have, they should win the league every season. But that doesn't mean you can't be ready to take an opportunity when an opportunity arrives. So you think when Monaco did, or Lille did, if we go back a couple of years, or
Lille,
if we go back, thank you.
You're welcome.
Or if we go back even further to Montpellier, it's going to take PSG dropping the ball for you to have a chance of winning the league. But you need to be ready to catch that ball when it drops. And I don't think any of these clubs are. And I think really that having one ogre in the league, and we've seen it in Germany to a certain extent as well, creates a climate of defeatism. It's like, we can't get there. So what's the point in having our shit together?
The point is coming second though, isn't it? Coming, yes. Being runners up.
Yeah, and also the fact that, I think that's the thing. You should be able, at least, or in terms of the size of the club, be able to name the clubs that are going to be in the Champions League places. Whereas in the Premier League, even if Manchester City are winning it most times there's a pretty decent consistency of the teams that are qualifying for the Champions League, which shows some sort of clarity of thought and planning, etc., as well as a hierarchy. But if you look at what Lyon and Marseille in particular have done in recent years, and Monaco as well, haven't qualified for the Champions League for, what, 5 years now? In the whole time that Vincent Benyedda has been there, being the best paid player who doesn't play for PSG, gets $600,000 a month. He hasn't played a group stage Champions League match. But, I mean, that's absolutely unacceptable, really, isn't it? And Marseille and Lyon, there is no reason, as you say, that they shouldn't be qualifying for the Champions League season after season after season. You look at the stadiums, the supporters they get in, the budgets, all that sort of stuff. And the fact that they have been so busy this transfer window, like I said, going back to what I was talking about before, it's an admission of failure. Mm. Now, Lyon are showing from getting those players in and how they're getting over that physical problem at the moment. Finally, they've got a bench. So when the starters start flagging after 60, 65 minutes, and we saw that in the Coupe de France this week, they can bring on other players, and that's how they close that game out against Lille in the end. But I thought it was really interesting that the guy who hit the nail on the head this week is Luis Enrique, the coach of Paris Saint-Germain, because they beat Brest in what was quite a difficult game in the end. It took Brest going down to 10 men for PSG to close the game out in the final stages. Luis Enrique came out afterwards. He said about Brest, well, the good news is we're not playing them again this season. That's an extraordinary thing for the manager of PSG to say. Now, of course, it's a massive compliment to Brest, and they've been brilliant, got in the top three this season. But of course, their budget is what, the 13th, 14th in the league, something like that. So they underline the fact that strategy as important as anything. If you want to start at least building in the right direction, there is no reason that Marseille or Lyon or Monaco or Rennes, who undercover had a really bad start to this season as well after spending quite a lot of money, there's no reason that they can't be as strategically savvy as Brest, but they're not doing it.
So far, the conversation has been about two leagues and the quote-unquote jeopardy that the leagues may have. Let's talk about a cup now, the German Cup. Earlier on in the week, we saw Leverkusen get through against Stuttgart. A match to talk about?
It was great. And my match of the week so far, it was brilliant. And it was interesting, actually, because Stuttgart, of course, third at the moment, really outstripping expectation. Leverkusen first, going into the big game against Bayern at the weekend, which we'll come to talk about, of course. And it was interesting hearing Dennis Undav, the on-loan Brighton striker who's at Stuttgart at the moment on a temporary deal. He's been brilliant. I mean, he scored 13 in 12 league starts so far and assisted loads as well. He's been outstanding, and he's put himself, without any international history and still theoretically being able to choose between Germany and Turkey, he's put himself at the front of the queue to be the starter in Euro 2024 for Germany. Nagelsmann absolutely loves him, and quite rightly so. And that's how they've got away with Seru Girassi, who was in front of Harry Kane, of course, until he picked up that hamstring injury in terms of goals in autumn. It's what has helped them to get past Girassi being off at AFCON. And Undav stood there after the game, immediately after this game that was won 3-2 by Leverkusen on Tuesday night. And he said, well, that was just a great game between the two best teams in the Bundesliga at the moment. And you're like, are you trying to provoke Bayern to do something at the weekend?
Prod them. Go on.
Well, Bayern do need a prodding now and then. But I thought that was an interesting thing to come out with. And it wasn't outrageous either, because Stuttgart have been really, really good. And what so impressed me about this win for Leverkusen, I think it's significant for a number of reasons, even though it's only an inverted cup, a cup quarterfinal. And most people see Leverkusen versus Bayern on Saturday is the big game of the week, and fair enough. But the important things here are, firstly, Leverkusen hadn't lost a domestic match going into this. They're 1-0 down at half time. They came out, like, and everyone talks about Xavi Alonso's calm and poise. I reckon he gives an absolute paint blisterer of a half time team talk, because when they don't play well in the first half, they come out with a rocket up them in the second half. They equalised. And you're thinking, okay, they're back on an even keel. They concede a second. They go behind again to Chris Führich, who's been great for Stuttgart this season. And again, I think will be important for Germany going forward. And you think, okay, they're in trouble here against a good team. And they managed to drag it back. They managed to get the game won. And importantly, you saw Xabi Alonso go mad when Jonathan Tah scored the winner. At least part of that must have been, thank God we don't have extra time before we play Bayern at the weekend. I think that must have been part of it. But the other level on which it's significant is the fact that not just because they've got this big game at the weekend, not just because they keep that unbeaten run going, but they've not won the DFB Pokal, the German Cup, since 1993. You know, they're called Leverkusen for a reason, or nicknamed Leverkusen for a reason. And this is a golden opportunity. This was like the final before the final, not just because these are two of the best teams in Germany, but you look at the teams that are left in it. So you have two Bundesliga 2 teams in Fortuna Düsseldorf and Kaiserslautern, And then the winner of the game that was rained off last night between Saarbrücken and Borussia Mönchengladbach. So a third tier team and a very much in transition top flight team. I mean, there is no excuse for Leverkusen to not win it from this point. So it's a massive opportunity for them.
I've got to go to you with the next point, Nicky, because of course there is a Leverkusen in North London as well, isn't there? But that aside, there is a lot of, well, I knew you'd enjoy that. There is a lot of interest in what Xavi Alonso does next, not least because of a certain vacancy that has been announced by a German coach at Liverpool.
It all feels almost too like convenient, doesn't it? Because the last coach to knock Bayern off their perch in Germany came over and became Liverpool manager, has had a very successful decade in charge, and now potentially the next manager to knock Bayern Munich off their perch in Germany could just step in and replace him. That would be a very...
I thought about every angle of it. I'd not actually thought about that angle of it.
A very convenient succession, wouldn't it? Just like Liverpool just wait until every time someone knocks Bayern out of the way, right, they can take the job. Of course, he hasn't done it yet, but if he did, it would be a very...
But you're suggesting, though, that they may have had a conversation, though, aren't you? Aren't you sure?
Listen, I don't have that contact to tell you that Xabi Alonso has or hasn't had a conversation with Liverpool. I think he's a very obvious person to be on a big club's radar right now. I think it would make total sense that they are considering him amongst other options. Whether or not his football is the same as Jurgen Klopp's, I don't think it quite is. And so you'd be looking at a change of style, but perhaps that's inevitable because I'm not sure there is another Jurgen Klopp waiting anywhere to fill those shoes. I think it's interesting, given we just said earlier this show about Inzaghi needs to win his league title first and then we can start talking about it. Alonso hasn't done it yet, but it is an extraordinary season they're having. And as Andy just alluded to, it's not just that they could win one thing, that they're on for a potential treble if they win the Europa League as well.
They've got to be one of the favourites for the Europa League, right? Yeah. Them and obviously Liverpool.
With Liverpool, and Milan. But
they're the two. I think even though Milan are in it, Liverpool and Leverkusen look like the two teams who are just like a bit too good for that competition, to semi-quote Joe Cole on it. I mean, the thing with Alonso that makes me think that he could be suitable for Liverpool, and there are lots of reasons why he shouldn't do it now. A, he's having a great time at Leverkusen and they won't get he won't get the opportunity to have that level of comfort, lack of scrutiny, I suppose, at Leverkusen, anywhere else.
Does it make a difference how successful they are this season as to what might happen to him?
I think it does, because if you win a couple of trophies out of that three, you must think, I can't do any better than this. You must think that is extraordinary not to, because Leverkusen is a very particular club. It would be a great club to work at. It's the sort of club where I think I would take my kids there and they think, oh, what work would be fun here? Because like everything's there that you need. The training pitch is right next to the Bayer Arena. They've got this like dynamic football focused weights room. It's all very holistic and it just looks brilliant. It's like a football themed theme park, really.
And your eyes look like Willy Wonka's when he's explaining about the chocolate factory.
Exactly. You're trying to stay away from the lemonade that lifts you to the ceiling. It's that sort of business. But I think as well, it's like a little bubble, really. And it's a great place for someone like Xabi Alonso to exist and develop as a coach, because you get to learn, you get to compete at a really high level. But it's a stadium that holds 30,000 where everything's like there in this kind of small city. So you don't get the scrutiny that you get at other mega clubs. So wherever he goes next, be it Liverpool or, you know, everyone else is assuming Real Madrid or Bayern at some point because of his history with those and because of how highly rated he is as a coach, the change in atmosphere is going to be massive for him. And he's not unaware of that. I mean, he said when I spoke to him in November, look, I do everything at my own pace and I'll go when I'm ready. Not when someone tells me it's the right time to go. At the moment, I'm having a great time here. So he's been like, at the moment, let's live in the present moment. So he's not made any promises beyond this season. But at the same time, he's not said, right, I get offered this job, I'm definitely going to take it. And you know, regardless of what the club means to him, I think he will go at the right time. The question is it the right time to follow Klopp? Because following a coach that's been in charge for nearly 9 years by the time he leaves, that's an extraordinary amount of time in the modern era. It's almost, if you compare the different times and how long coaches tend to last, it's almost like succeeding Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm. Now, you could argue, of course, that Liverpool are being left in a better state by Klopp than Sir Alex Ferguson left the Manchester United team, because they've sort of started that rebuild, certainly last summer. But on the other hand, they're still looking for a sporting director. Everything at Leverkusen is just so. It's a bit like a mini version of when Guardiola arrived at Bayern Munich. It's just, you coach the team, you do the philosophy bit. You don't have to think about anything else. I would want to believe, if I was Xabi Alonso, I would want to believe that everything upstairs is completely solid for me to go in and do the best that I possibly can in a job where, you know, expectations will be massive because of who he is and because of the work that Klopp has done over the last nearly 9 years.
If you're a Leverkusen fan, Nicky, do you, in terms of what you want to have in this season, do you have to be careful what you wish for? Because it feels like, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
I think in some ways that's less true because Klopp has put this out so early, right? I don't think, I can't imagine, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine if Liverpool are considering Alonso that they will sit there and think to themselves, well, if he doesn't win the league, we cancel it. You know, if he doesn't win immediately, that's off our shortlist.
Yeah.
So I don't think it really would affect that decision either way at this point. So no, I think if you're a Leverkusen fan, you're loving every minute and hoping it's not another Leverkusen story.
And you're realistic as well. You know, you know where your club is in the food chain. They're enjoying an incredible season, both in terms of the results, but more the enjoyment. I mean, that's the feeling you got off this DFB Pokal game. There's just what a moment for your club. It's just everything's so exciting. I think the thing that convinces people that Alonso could be the guy, whether it's for Liverpool or it's extraordinary actually to think of such a young coach who a substantial amount of people feel could be the man for any one of the three of the biggest clubs in the world. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable to be in that position, but we have to take it all the way back and say this is a guy who took over with no experience of top flight management, who took over a team that was second bottom in the Bundesliga, were all over the shop, had a squad that definitely wasn't built for the relegation scrap, and he managed to go through the stages of improving them, getting them out of the relegation zone, then switching it up and making them challenge for stuff. And he's done it all in like less than two seasons. You know, he's only been in charge since October 2022. It's remarkable because normally, I think for any coach, it's tough when the parameters of a job change. And we've seen it with so many different coaches. You know, you could say whether it's Lampard or Mourinho or whoever else, but he's adapted to that. Mm. And I think they play very different football now to when he first arrived. And for a young coach with relatively little experience to be able to figure that out, to not just have, this is my philosophy and it's going to be fly or die, I think that's remarkable. And that's the thing that's so convincing about Alonso. And that is maybe for the first time in a long time watching the Bundesliga, why you don't have a feeling of, oh, well, you know, they're just going to run out of gas and Bayern will take over and that'll be that. You know, obviously, I think everyone wants reasons to believe from this game at the weekend. But everything Xabi Alonso has done so far, I think, can lead you to believe.
Has Nicky ever been wrong on OTC? I know you and I have.
Oh, my God.
But, well, we'll find out.
No pressure.
Well, talking of which, it's time for you both to suggest a game of the week. So,
I've definitely been wrong about those sometimes.
Well, let's see how you do this time. All right, do you want to go first?
Yeah,
on this?
I can go first. I'm going to go with Roma against Inter because I think Roma are interesting right now. Daniele De Rossi obviously has replaced Jose Mourinho as manager. He's won his first three games in charge. I think after all the many, many conversations we had on this podcast about Roma's attachment to Mourinho and what it was going to look like moving on from him, it's been really interesting to see them start quite emphatically under De Rossi. They won 4-0 against Cagliari on Monday night. I have a strong hunch that winning start is going to come to an unambiguous end against Inter. I think there is still a real quality gap. Having said that, they go to this game with the most important piece is healthy. Dybala's healthy. Lukaku's healthy. Lukaku might just have a point to prove against Inter. Pellegrini is scoring goals in a way that he wasn't under Mourinho. It's an interesting game on Saturday at 5:00. And just for you, Dutton, because last time I was asked about the food to go with it.
Yes.
And you were unhappy with me because you said I never choose meat. So I've made sure that I've chosen a meat dish this time. Abbacchio, which is like a Roman way of cooking a lamb chop. It's generally a very specific kind of lamb, very young and milk fed to get the real deal. But it's a way of cooking the lamb chop with browning it off at first with some oil and anchovies. Then you cook it in a roasting pan with some wine and other bits added to that, and then serve it with some little finely chopped roast potatoes.
I've never seen you scribbling so quickly, even when you're doing the running order.
Look at the smile on my face. If it's good enough for the Romans, good enough for us, I like to think.
There we go.
What about a game of the week from you?
It's an obvious one. We've kind of just been touching on it. It has to be Leverkusen versus Bayern Munich. Saturday night, 5:30 UK time. Very much the top spiel in the Bundesliga. That's when they have the big games, like their Super Sunday on the early Saturday evening. And there's so much to look forward to about this game. And of course, me and Archie Rintut are going to be doing a OTC Reacts on it on Monday. So look on your feed for that. Archie's going to be at the game. If you're going to eat something with this, well, this would be a bit impractical if you were at the game. But if you're at home, I would say go for a Schweinshaxer, which is
with knobs on.
Steady, you will like it. It's a pork knuckle. I do it very well in Cologne. And trust me, if you're going to Leverkusen, you're going to be staying in Cologne. I think it's something that's like hearty. It's winter. It's something that you can have any type of like sort of potato dish or like sauerkraut next to as well. Celebrate the end of German winter with the best that Germany has to offer.
Do they not know how to spell vegetarianism there?
I tell you what, actually, last couple of times I've been to Dortmund, the amount of vegetarian twists on traditional food has been very, very impressive.
Oh.
A substantial vegetarian menu. We're not talking about, you know, British pub and veg lasagna or nachos in the 90s. They've made big strides.
Well, you don't want a game of the week recommendation from me, but let me just say, this weekend there is a date with Destiny in Abidjan. Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news in the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
Are we really going to let you go without getting a food recommendation for the AFCON final?
Well, jollof rice, the Nigerian jollof rice. Please do not confuse it with any other jollof rice from Ghana. Well, you might confuse it with jollof rice from Senegal, because after all, that's where it comes from.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.